Raleigh, North Carolina. It's The Lost Podcast with Jay and Jack, a podcast dedicated to the show Lost on ABC. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Hey everybody, and welcome to the Season 8 premiere of The Lost Podcast with Jay and Jack. My name is Jay.
And I'm Jack.
And welcome to the show. Today, we have a special guest on The Lost Podcast, none other than Rob Cesternino, very well-known, well-renowned, famous podcaster in his own right, as well as Survivor contestant, one of the Survivor contestant. And we've had him on, we've talked to him a few times during our Autism Speaks Charity Marathon podcast, podcast-a-thon. And just a great, great guy. We've hung out with him before, and we've been trying to set up for him to come on The Lost Podcast since we've done this kind of retrospective.
But I guess he's busy doing podcasting.
This man does a lot of podcasts. I mean, he podcasts all day. So it's incredible that he's able to make time to talk to us. And we're very thankful, especially today, because he's a Giants Mets fan, and the Mets are in the World Series.
Hold on a second. He's a Giants fan or a Mets fan?
A Giant Mets fan.
Okay. Well, you know, Don Draper's a big Mets fan, so he's probably happy.
What is it like? No. That's the Mets, something like that, right?
Was it the Mets? It's the Mets. I don't know.
It was one of those '60s things. But either way, so hopefully the Mets pull out a win for him today.
What do you mean? What do you mean one of those '60s things?
You know, like stupid, cheesy commercials.
Why are you insulting the '60s? Well, I'd like to teach the world to sing.
But so we're very excited to have him on, and we're very excited to kick off this new season of The Lost Podcast with Jay and Jack. We'll continue to do kind of episodes like these with, you know, some of our friends, podcasting friends, some famous friends, all two of them.
I'm working on Jimmy Kimmel.
Oh, you are? Oh, that'd be great. Are you eating something over there?
Maybe. If you guys could tweet Jimmy Kimmel and say, hey, please come on the Jay and Jack podcast.
I'm sure that'll work. And other things that are out there is we're doing a lot of podcasts. So if you listen to The Lost Podcast, thank you for listening. And there's other ones that are out there. We do a Leftovers podcast, Damon Lindelof's newer show. It's fantastic this season, and we are podcasting about it. We also podcast about Game of Thrones last season. We will again this upcoming season. We're doing an Amazing Race podcast, a Survivor podcast. And for maybe the Survivor listeners or fans that are listening to this because Rob's on it, ours is nowhere near as good as his podcast. It's more just kind of us as fans talking about the show. With the Married Man show is back, the Ramblecast is back, so it's all out there, and you can check it out on all iTunes, and it's brought to you by you, the listener. Our shows are all free now because of patronage of our listeners through patreon.com/Jay and Jack. You can become a patron today over at patreon.com/Jay and Jack. That's patreon.com/Jay and Jack, and thank you for all those that have already given. So without further ado, why don't we get into this podcast with none other than Rob Cesternino. Here we go. All right, welcome, Rob.
Yes, guys, how's it going?
Woo, it's going well. How are you?
Oh, very good. Very excited to be here with you guys and catching up.
I know, yeah. It's been a while. I think the last marathon podcast we did, I think you came on.
Yes.
But you're usually so busy. You're busy. You're like the busiest podcaster I know.
I do a lot of stuff, but it's nice to talk to you guys when you're not like in the middle of like a marathon stretch where it's sort of like, hey, when's the coffee getting in here?
That's my biggest flaw is that I don't drink coffee. So like I'm the worst in those things.
Yeah.
I don't even like the smell of coffee.
Oh, come on.
I can't stand it. Can't stand the smell.
I'm going to hang up the call right now.
We finally found the trick to Rob doing all the amazing podcasts that he does every single day.
Give me some coffee!
For those who know, this is Rob Cesternino, I think world famous podcaster now. Even I think you're probably more famous as a podcaster than maybe an ex-Survivor contestant, possibly.
Well, if anybody ever comes up and talks to me like a random person, like it's never from like they knew me from Survivor. It's only from like the podcast.
Is it?
Yeah. Nice. Where, you know, if I'm ever stopped anywhere by somebody, like, it's not like, hey, you were on Survivor. 'Cause, I mean, it was a long time ago that I did Survivor. I think it's like 12 years now from when I did it, or maybe even 13. And at this point, if anybody, like, recognizes me, it's from, you know, listening to the podcast.
Nice.
You
nice.
Like, do you prefer that over getting recognized for Survivor, or is it just...
Sure, because, I, you know, if anything, it's like, you know, the people that know you from podcasting are sort of like people that are actually into what you're doing, where it's sort of like the people that, like, might recognize you from a thing like Survivor. It's sort of like they vaguely recollect, like, I know you from somewhere. And it's yeah. like, then they have, like, really, like, sort of, like, general questions about Survivor. Like, so, like, so tell me, like, is it really hard out there? And you're sort of just like in just like sort of like base level sort of like Survivor as a concept type conversation. Yeah. It's just like, all right, you know, can I just go back to what I was doing?
Where do you poop? Like, where does that happen?
Yeah, it's a lot of that. It's a lot of that. It's like,
that
so,
is a question, like, I've always had, but
you can't ask it now because it's too generic.
Well, where did the people on Lost poop? Why don't we ever talk about that?
We talked about that on a podcast.
We did.
When Sawyer and Kate were locked in the cages.
Yep.
I said, how do they go to the bathroom?
it's like the classic kind of TV drama thing. It's like the 24 joke. It's like, okay, it's 24 hours. When's the restroom break in this?
He wears the pants. That came out.
Or he just has a really strong body. He just hold it the whole entire
time.
Well,
that's why he always talks this way. Because he's constipated. So,
But it is what it's just. We kind of it suspend you know, your imagination or whatever on that. Prolific podcaster now. I mean, you've won multiple podcast awards, which is awesome. We won the one, and then we just quit ever trying again. So we just won the one podcast award.
Well, we 27 years ago. Another one, but we were blown out. So.
I like to say that we quit trying.
It's a big deal, though, now.
It is. It's like, yeah, they have, like, hosts and stuff like that. When we did it, there was, like, two people there.
I would have gone to it if I knew it was a big deal in Vegas. I didn't even go.
There was, like, it was, like, maybe a small little group of people. They think they webcasted it. Now it's, like, they have famous people hosting. It's crazy.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you very much. And I'm just glad you guys weren't in the running.
Yeah. you would have kicked our butts, honestly. I just love what you're doing. Your podcasts are doing fantastically well. So what is next in the empire in which you are conquering of this kind of post show, you know, recap world? What's on the horizon for you in terms of what you're podcasting about, because your Survivor podcasts are amazing. And you do a lot more than that too. So, like, what's next for Rob Cesternino?
Well, really what's next is that my wife is very close to giving birth to our second child. And so while I'm sort of like coming out of this period where I was working on like an audio book that we finished for like 14 months, it's like, okay, so what's the next thing that we should jump into? Like, I'm sort of like, you know what, maybe let me hold off on figuring out what that next thing is and sort of just like devote time to, you know, getting this baby into the world and not also getting divorced in the process. So I'm trying to resist the urge to branch off, because we're covering, you know, we do all of the reality TV podcasts on Rob as a podcast. And then about 2 years ago, we started covering scripted TV on another site, Post Show Recaps. And I'm sort of like trying to come up with maybe thinking of like other things to get into podcasting. But then I also sort of say, like, well, maybe we should just, you know, make sure with like everything that we're doing now is working, as opposed to like spreading ourselves too thin.
Pulling the Starbucks, where you have a Starbucks in every corner, and then they have to. Like,
I don't know if we need Starbucks on every corner. Basically, I just want to make it where, you know, we're not like you know, coming where you walk into Starbucks and it's like, boy, the coffee sucks here today. What's going on?
Who's
running? Yeah,
We're very excited. I mean, because my wife is actually, I think, a Rob Cesternino fan girl, and she's also a big Nicole fan girl. She's like the biggest Nicole fan. I wouldn't qualify stalker, but she like follows you on Snapchat and she thinks, hey, Rob's so funny. I'm like, what's so great about Rob? What about me? I'm right here. I'm your husband. Yeah. Aren't I special?
No, my wife doesn't think I'm funny at all. So Somebody has to. Somebody has to think.
Well, that's good. That's good. And my wife just opened the door and she just called me an a-hole through the door.
That's
no,
love.
Very excited. I mean,
I would take that. Yeah.
So going from one kid to two kids, kind of scary because we had our first son Zachary 16 months ago.
Yes.
And your son is very adorable as well. So is it kind of scary going into from one to two? Because I hear that's like the big. That's when you like really become a parent and stuff gets real.
Yeah, people say that that's sort of like the big jump to go from, you know, it's 5 times harder, it's 10 times harder. But, you know, I'm sort of like less scared about having the second one because I kind of feel the first one, I'm like, what do we do? We're going to break him. And where I'm not so scared about that anymore. But I feel like that we're just a little scared about it going from being where we could sort of double team him to sort of like now we're playing in man to man.
Yep. Yeah. That's the scary part. And when you go from two to three, that's where it's like, we know we're done at two. We don't want the kids outnumber the parents.
We're out. We only want two. That's it.
Cowards. Cowards.
See, I feel like the parents that have that many children, they're just trying to goad other parents into making the same mistake. Because like, we're miserable. You should be miserable too. Like, I feel like that's the angle they're going for.
Misery does love
sleeping.
Company.
You shouldn't sleep either.
it's tricky, but hopefully, you know, things will be you know, pretty calm around here. We hope that you know, Dominic is a good boy, and we hope that you know, that other kids will follow his example for the most part.
how's he doing with it? Like, because it you know, being the big brother, I was a big brother. It's a big responsibility. Is he excited about it, or is he almost kind of maybe a little bit jealous? Like, how is he?
No, he doesn't know what's going on. Okay. It's really like, you know, it's the you know, his sibling is you know, still in the womb. He just thinks that, you know, mom ate a basketball, and he's like he's always like, you know, he wants to like, you know, touch her stomach, but I don't think he sort of like gets the idea that there's a person who's going to be here soon in there. So he doesn't quite can't quite wrap his head around it.
Is Dominic like two and a half, two, somewhere around?
Yeah,
there?
He just turned two in September, okay, so he's cool. Like, you know, two and change.
Yeah, because like I said, still pretty young. He doesn't quite understand probably the magnitude yet of what's going on.
No, he has no idea what's going on.
He has no idea what's
coming. That's the best time to be alive. I have no idea what's going on.
Are you guys keeping the sex a secret? Do you know, or are you kind of maybe not telling anybody?
Yeah,
or?
We know. We haven't announced yet. Okay. We try to have some things, you know, at least some surprise.
We did, when we kept the name to ourselves, we didn't tell anybody till Zach was born.
Right, though.
But yeah, Jack didn't like that. He was very upset about it. But I was like, "Come on, this is our thing." You know, holding.
No, I guess Samuel, because I know you guys like Samuel Adams beer.
I don't mind the name Samuel, but I sound like Sam. Sam's too like meh, man.
So for all those listeners named Sam out there,
I'm not trying to offend the Samuels and the Sams out there.
You just did.
For my kid, I think Sam was. It sounds so much like spam. So I was like, yeah.
Yeah, we told everybody. We didn't care.
Yeah.
But
for our last one, we didn't know the sex, and I didn't know the name of it because we thought it was supposed to be a boy. Everyone kept saying boy, boy, boy. The ultrasound was boy. Everything was boy. And then when it came out girl, I was like, girl. And so my wife actually gave me the name. I think I spelled it wrong because I didn't know how to spell her name. So anyway.
It's great father work right there.
Yeah, what are you doing? But again, it was a third. You guys don't understand. You're stuck. The third one, you're beyond tired. So
that's true. That is true. No. So very exciting. I think we had to do in November, somewhere around there, right, or something like that, or close.
Yeah, baby is due like mid-November.
Mid-November, exciting, very exciting. But
I got a question. What happens if it comes on? She goes into labor on a Wednesday night.
Yeah, well, I sort of like have looked at the calendar, and so Wednesday, November 4th should be Game 7 of the World Series and Survivor Wednesday. So that should be, at the very least, my wife should at least go into like I think I'm having contractions. You need to take me to the hospital right now, because she's
I'll,
always
I'll get
testing
you a cab.
Me. Right. It's always a test to see, what are you really going to do? Are you going to save me, or are you going to do the podcast? Which is it? It's always a test.
It's like, it's a test you can't win, right? You can't win. It's a lose-lose.
Just tell her, look, I'll get back, do the podcast. Come on. I think she'll be understanding.
No.
Well, I was going to ask, what are you more excited about, the arrival of your newborn child or the Mets are in the World Series? I know you probably can't answer that the right way or get in trouble, but still.
Well, you know, I just had a kid and the Mets haven't been to the World Series since 2000. So, I mean, just to be fair, very excited about both things. And, you know, this is very, very nice because it's unexpected. The pregnancy was planned. The Mets thing was very unexpected.
That was an accident.
It's usually the inverse of that, right?
Yeah, the Mets thing was like an oops. How did this happen?
I did have a question for you as a Mets fan because you beat the Cubs, and we know the Cubs have had a long suffering history of, you know, it's been since 1908 since they've won a World Series. I think it's been since the 40s since they've been to a World Series.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a long time for a major city like that. And I'm part of I'm a Padre fan. Jay's a Padre fan, and games where the Padres beat the Cubs to keep them from going to the World Series after they went up to 2-0. Do you feel any guilt that all those Cub fans that had their hearts broken that your team went to the World Series?
No, I don't feel any. I mean, I feel a little guilty about the whole ruining Back to the Future too. I think that I feel guilty about that. Stop that from happening because I do love Back to the Future. But the Cubs have a really good young core. They're not losing any big pieces in free agency, and they're going to spend money. So the Cubs are going to have their window here. You know, this is the first year for them, and they've got a lot of, you know, great young players. And I really do believe that they're going. You know, you never know, but I do believe that the Cubs have like a good 5 years here where they're going to have a bunch of shots at this.
You can tell them that because I was talking to a Cubs fan yesterday. I was wearing a Charger sweatshirt and a Charger hat. And he's like, you just don't understand. I go, I'm like, well, do you see what I'm wearing? I'm a Charger fan. You don't understand. I go, look, I said the same thing you said. I go, they got a good young team. I go, you got great young players. I go, you're in a large market city. No, I'm not over this yet.
Well, you have to. It's tough.
Like, too raw.
I think, but you know, here's my thing with being a Cubs fan is I think they choose to be a Cubs fan because they want to be upset about their team losing all the time. Like, I feel like that is part of being a Cubs fan. Like, I feel like, okay, you know what you were getting into when you became a Cubs fan. It's not like, okay, they won
a
couple.
It does come
and
with a warning label,
forever, right?
It's like, does come with a warning. Your heart may be broken. Into. Surgeon generals have determined that.
But the Mets, on the other hand, like the Mets, I always am fascinated about because I like the Mets. I'm a Padres fan, but I've always liked the Mets just because the New York's such a National League city, and the Dodgers and Giants left, and the Mets kind of filled that void. And they've won some World Series, but they also have just long stretches of just, you know, horrible, all just stupid stuff happening to them, bad ownership, whatever. But now they have this core group of pitching, and it's just. It's really an exciting time to be a Mets fan. Like, I have a lot of family in-laws in New York, and they, you know, it's like Mets fever in New York now. It's kind of cool to see the Yankees take a back seat and the Mets take the front seat in New York sports. It's kind of cool.
Well, going back to what you guys were saying about the Cubs fan and the kind of person that picks to be a Cubs fan, because again, that's a city where there's two teams. You know, you could sort of, you know, if you wanted to, you could root for the White Sox, you could root for the Cubs, and you know, you get born into a family, but there are, you know, two teams in that city. And then sort of in New York, you have the same sort of option of like, you could be a Mets fan or you could be a Yankee fan. And typically, like, the kind of person that identifies with the team, sort of like, you know, there's reasons that they see themselves in those teams. And the Mets are just, you know, the long-suffering, you know, typical little brother in New York. And it's just, this is the first time in, you know, almost, you know, 30 years that the Mets really have the stage all to themselves here. So it's a very exciting time for the Mets. And I really hope that they can capitalize on this moment in the sun, because it's been a long time coming. It really has. And the one time we went to the World Series since 86 was in 2000, where we lost to the Yankees. Yeah. Which was, you know, very nice to go there. But then to lose to the big brother in that big spot, that was, you know, really gut-wrenching. And just one quick thing as to your San Diego Padres. I mean, the San Diego really brought the Mets to their lowest point of the season. I believe
it was
July 30th was really the absolute lowest of the low points when the Mets had a 7-1 lead against San Diego on a Thursday afternoon, and it was like, okay, look at us, like things are going good. Yeah, you know, they had made that trade for Carlos Gomez that didn't go through, and Wilmer Flores was crying, and they didn't get traded, and then they blew that 7-1 lead. They had a 7-5 lead, and then they did a rain delay with two outs, nobody on in the ninth inning with the closer on the mound. They put the tarp on the field. They came back, and it was like a walk and a bloop and then a Justin Upton blast. And then somehow it was like a stunning defeat. And it was just the most demoralizing moment of the whole season. And then the next day they traded for Cespedes and they haven't looked back since.
Right. That's crazy. Because as a Padres fan, I was watching that game while
I was watching also.
And I kept going, for me as a Padres, I was like, oh my God, they're not going to get the win because if they don't come back from the rain delay, you know, they didn't actually complete the game.
There was a problem with the tarp too, wasn't there?
Yeah, the tarp thing.
We were all complaining that they did the tarp thing on purpose. They didn't put the tarp out correctly on purpose.
So there's just all this stuff going on. And to me, as just a fan, I was like, that was the straw that broke the camel's back for the Mets this year. I was like, because you're talking about the Flores and crying, like it was just like this whole series of events that was so Mets-like. But it's amazing that out of that, they got Cespedes and the season kind of turned around, which was like opposite of what I was thinking. I was like, oh, here we go again with the Mets, which is usually with a San Diego team. But
Washington was like 7 games up at one point and going strong, and they had great pitching, and then all of a sudden, the Mets were up by 7 games. It was just
They had a big. I don't know if they were up if they were ever up by 7, but they did have like a nice lead against the Mets. And the game with that, you know, that Justin Upton 3-run homer game, where there was a rain delay, and then they came back, and then after the Justin Upton home run, the Mets still had to get to the bottom of the ninth, and there was another rain delay. Yep. And just during that rain delay, like I just remember listening to New York talk radio, and people were just calling in like, are you kidding me with this team? This team will never win. This owner is cheap. It was just the, you know, height of frustration from the entire year. And it's so crazy. You have to bottom out sometimes before things can get better. Yeah.
But I think last thing about the Mets and kind of the fun thing of the season, I think Jim Brewer, it's Jim Brewer, right?
Yes.
Yeah. His like post game recaps have just become this fun thing that almost like kind of highlights this fun resurgent season for the Mets. Would you agree? As a Mets fan, have you liked those, or do you kind of think they're whatever?
Haven't really been following them, but it's really been such a crazy season where it was like they were red hot to start the season. They won like 11 games in a row, like in the first like 2 weeks of the season, and they were like something like 13-2 to start the season. And then they ended up, then they played for like the next 3 months, probably like, 10 games under 500. And they had like the worst lineup in baseball. And it was terrible, and it was excruciating, and it was agonizing. And so it was great to have that, captured by somebody, who's so animated like Jim Brewer.
So good luck, Mets. We're rooting for him in this household, even though I really like the Royals too. Like I won't be, you'll be heartbroken. I was like, oh, the Royals are a good team. They're a small market team. I was trying to root for the little guy as well. But we're definitely pulling for the Mets. So we wish your Mets the best. Before we get into our loss discussions here, what are your thoughts on Survivor this season? I mean, people listen to your podcast know your thoughts, but this season I think has been pretty good so far with the Second Chance.
Well, Survivor had a very exciting concept for the season this year, where they decided to bring back all these returning players and America was going to vote them in. So the season came in with a lot of hype and all these big personalities sort of like raring to go. And so you got out of the gate like really hot. I think that these last couple of weeks, I think the show has lagged a little bit just with this going to 3 tribes, which they had 2 and then they split down to 3. And I think that sort of slowed down the action a little bit these last couple of weeks. And I'm sort of looking forward to the point where we get back to 2 tribes, and not to second guess the decision, because I was all for it. I was like, oh my God, this is brilliant. Sort of split people up. But even like, you know, on to tie it back to Lost, it's sort of like, you know, it's much more fun when all the characters are sort of in the same place.
Yes.
And, you know, they sort of had, you know, people like on all these different beaches then. And so I thought it made it less fun these last couple of weeks where it was sort of like now we split these people up further, where I'm looking forward to the point where they sort of like start to converge more and really ultimately get back to the point where we have the merge and everybody is on the same beach at the same time.
Yeah, no, I agree. I really like the strategy behind it because, I mean, you probably know more than anyone. Like, the returning players games, it seems like there's a lot of, and it could go either way. I don't think it necessarily guarantees you're going to have a pregame alliance, but there seems to be a lot of more pregame strategy for the returning players versus, you know, a whole new cast that won't know each other before they go. So I like the idea of breaking up that early to kind of shift things around a little bit.
Yeah.
Which does help. And speaking of... Well, go ahead.
I was going to say, the thing about these survivors is that, you know, they're all thick as thieves, and the problem is that they knew they were coming back, so there's all these sort of, like, pre-game, like, conversations that happen, so the show is trying to do whatever they can to sort of keep them off balance and sort of mixing things up to sort of mess with them and sort of trying to, like, come up with ways to ruin these plans that they came up with before they even got on the show, so there's, like, a yin and a yang to all of it.
I have a question. Who has the best shocked look on their face this season, Wu or Monica? After the vote,
Wu has it patented because Wu, he's always got the blindside face. He's been blindsided so many times by things.
I think they should change the hashtag Wu face. Just like
yes.
They should change the emoji to be Wu face. Just that, like,
there you go.
Colon with like the mouth open is just like you know. If you put in brackets,
what's going on? What's going on?
Oh man!
Who do you guys like? Who's your favorite on this season?
I'm a big Jeremy fan. I really liked him his first season, so I'm pulling for him.
I like him.
I like Spencer, but I would have voted him off the last time. I wouldn't have voted Monica. I would have voted Spencer out. I think he's the bigger threat. I like Jeremy. I like the older guys too. I like to see. I'm old, so I like to see an old guy win it. Maybe
Heath,
maybe Dietz or Savage. Maybe they could win it. I doubt it, but who knows? I'm just waiting for Cast it because I don't think she read the whole book about being nice. So I think that maybe at the end she's going to come back and be Cass again. I think that would be fun.
Yeah, well, she hasn't really had her butt pushed.
Yes,
yeah,
that's true. She hasn't.
This cast would have never got a second chance. She wouldn't have been voted on.
Yeah, they would have. Nobody would have wanted her to come back.
No,
but I think it's smart though in the way she's playing she's going to try to win. You know, you got to play it more subdued. So I think it's a good strategy so far. So she's smart though.
I always talk about with these players where it's like, you know, play the first time like you're trying to get back on the show a second time. And then play the second time like you're actually going to win. Like, Cochran was the best at that, where he was just, like, a disaster his first time out there, and like, a total character. And then the second time, he played it, like, pretty smart. So I think that that's a good one where you just, like, go out there, like, sort of, like, play the game that's going to, like, get you attention. And then the second time, play the game that you're going to win.
You think Jeff is getting more vocal at calling people out? Maybe did it start with Cochran? Because he was like, Monica can't even untie. What is it? You know, the last time he just seems like he's more likely to throw someone under the bus than
He really rides the people that he doesn't particularly love. Like, he's Jeff is very like generous with his praise when he likes you, and then if it's like if he's not feeling it, like he'll definitely be, you know, killing people out there.
It's just like it's like any estranged father son or father daughter relationship. Like, you never supported me.
Sort of a weird relationship on Survivor because sort of the announcer is also the referee, and it's like you don't have this in anything. Like, you don't have like in baseball, like the umpire isn't also like calling the game. Like, not even in professional wrestling is the referee also like calling the action at ringside.
That's true.
So
that's true. That's
really
true.
Is sort of like a person who is, you know, I guess, unbiased ruler of all of the proceedings, but is also like narrating what's happening. So, and sort of weird to wear those two hats.
It's true, but it's much better than like the early seasons where he didn't even talk at all. During the when you go back and watch season one, it's really awkward when they're doing the challenge and there's no commentary whatsoever. It's like, what?
Richard Hatch is running around naked again. No, I didn't.
No, it's just like, but they said little like subtitle updates on.
Yeah,
it was
like a lower third.
It was really bad.
He didn't know what to do. Like, I mean, and that's really the fun thing about like going to watch those Survivor seasons. And I had, you know, watched them all in order over the last year or so, where there's a fun like evolution of Jeff, where it's not until probably around like season four or five that he sort of knows what he's supposed to be doing during those challenges.
Yeah, it's a classic Ricky Bobby. What do I do with my hands? I don't.
You think anyone's ever said it and they just edited it out? Shut up, Jeff. Trying to
concentrate. Surely, yeah. And sometimes they don't even edit it out. Yeah.
This season seems, and it may be because there's, like you said, everybody's thick as thieves, this season seems as the most, like, post-show controversy that I've seen, where, like, if somebody gets kicked off, there's just a lot of, I don't know, trash talking, or maybe even
bitterness,
spoilers. Like, it's just, this season seems to, like, from at least from what I've noticed lately, like, it's pretty heated, you know, like with Shireen saying the thing that got cut out of the episode, or did it even get cut out? Like, it's just, there's a lot of stuff going on. It seems more than usual. Have you felt the same way?
Well, you have these veterans who've all done the show before, who all have sort of like a social media following, and all sort of like all feel like they're the best. And then, you know, whatever happened, it's hard to like sort of look in the mirror and say, you know what, I really kind of blew that, as opposed to, it's easy to point the finger to production. This person was cheating. This person had a pregame alliance. And so you have a lot more of that than, say, people who are just sort of like the rookies who came in, had this experience, and are able to walk away and say, you know, boy, I didn't win, but, you know, Survivor was so much fun. I definitely would do it again, as opposed to, like, a lot of people that just, like, are coming out of this sort of, like, had, like, this jaded experience on the second time.
No, yeah, it's definitely been, and it probably happened more and more as time goes on, as social media becomes more and more prevalent. And people's almost, like, the characters they almost portray becomes more and more to the forefront. And, you know, after watching this season, I see why you would never want to go back on this show, just from what I've seen with Fishback. And, like, you know, just it's almost like if Jack and I were on a Lost episode, it'd be the worst idea ever, because all we do is talk about it, criticize it, praise it. And then if you're actually on it, it's a no-win situation if you go back, because then you're like thought of as like the expert or something.
Yeah. It's not a great gig to necessarily go do Survivor. It's like people ask me a lot about, like, oh, but do you want to go back and do the show? And it's like sort of like, the proposition is, you know, take like a 1 in 20 chance or 1 in 18 chance that I could win, and sort of like really just like stop doing like what I'm doing, which is covering the show, which is my job, and sort of like, you know, what, you know, and my livelihood. So just stop doing that for, you know, 6 months or a year. And then, you know, for like a spin of the roulette wheel where maybe you have, you know, a 5% chance that it's going to ultimately, you know, work out in your favor. Thanks, but no thanks. I'm good.
Yeah. It's definitely, it's not, well, it, not only that, but then it's for you, it's probably, you have like the opposite of what you suggested you should do on Survivor, which is really, you know, kind of ham it up. Maybe your first season, just go to play, and then the second time come back to win. Where the first season, really, you were a very strategic player. Arguably, if there was the three-person final instead of the two-person final, you could have won, should have won that season. And then you came back the second time, people already had that in your mind that you were a player versus not a threat.
Well, I was hamming it up quite a bit also when I was out there the first time. But, you know, I didn't know that there was no such thing as coming back the first time that we played. It was sort of like I didn't even know that there was a possibility that people were going to come back until, like, you know, a day before they announced it, where I had gone to something. It was like right after my season. And they brought in like Richard and Rudy and a couple of like the you know, the first players. And I'm like, why are you guys here? And they're like, you don't know about the All-Stars? I'm like, no, what are you guys talking about? So I didn't even know that was a possibility until, you know, well after I had even played the first time. So, you know, it's tough when you come out of a game where you are sort of branded as, oh, watch out for this person, and then everybody sort of like is gunning for you in a second go round. And that's, you know, where the game is probably a little less pure when you play it with people who already know each other.
Yeah, yeah. So it's where I go, I love Malcolm, but I don't know if Malcolm will ever win just because he's so, you know, loved by ladies.
Joe.
And Joe, who's playing right now, is just like, well, Joe, yeah. You know what Joe is, and you're not going to keep him around.
I would vote Joe out as soon as I could.
Right? So it's just,
there's no way you can beat him.
Yeah.
He's got great hair.
But without further ado, why don't we get into some Lost talk here? It is a Lost
podcast. I just had one quick question about Amazing Race.
Go ahead. Real quick.
What do you think of the mother and son team?
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, we like them. I think that they've been very very fun. I actually like the mom is been like really good TV. Like it's sort of like a weird relationship between the two of them, but she's like kind of ditzy is probably know not the nicest way to say it, but it's they're funny together.
Yeah, my wife and I have been doing a podcast. At first, I labeled her Mommy Dearest. But she's grown on me, so I kind of feel bad about doing that. But even Justin, and I kind of was anti-Justin, but now I kind of like him. The only team I don't like is the paparazzi team. I wish they would just lose.
Why? Because they're fighting? I feel like that's the team I can relate to the most.
I know, but he just can't make a decision. It's just not. It's just like, and for the first 3 weeks, I thought he was Logan and she was Chris. I was totally wrong on their names, so maybe it's just me. I don't know. Anyway, Would you go on an Amazing Race?
I probably wouldn't because they would probably want me to go with my wife. And as I was telling you guys on the pre-show, I couldn't go to the zoo today without getting into a big fight with my wife. So it was, not going to work.
My wife goes, why don't we apply? I go, it would just never work. And then Jay's talked about it. And I go, that would work. My daughter goes, we need to do this. I go, because neither one of us is good at directions. So I go, it wouldn't work because neither one of us is good at directions. I go, I'm with you though on the wife. My wife goes, we would work together. No.
Well, it's almost a problem with like you're with somebody long enough, they know all of your faults immediately and they go to them immediately. So it's just like
I say, you know, the biggest problem is I would come off as the biggest jerk on Amazing Race history because I'd be screaming at you the whole time. It would be that guy that everybody hates and Social Network, get that jerk off the show. It would be worse than that.
But I said, no, everybody would take my wife's side.
Yeah.
Rob, we have your side here, right? We got your back. We got your back.
Yeah, thank you.
you're in a safe place.
It's a safe place, all right? It's a safe place. Married men here where it's a safe place. It's a
it's a club.
You're a big Lost fan, right? You love the TV show Lost.
And oh, yeah. It was a huge show in terms of impacting my life in a lot of different ways. And, you know, most notably, probably, I don't think I get into podcasting if it's not for Lost. And, listening to, you guys and, you know, so much of the the early podcast stuff around that time.
Yeah, that was the wild, wild west days of the podcast world. well, because like when we started, there wasn't podcasts about
survive?
TV show. Like it wasn't a thing, you know. But it's crazy to think about that. Lost premiered over 10 years ago. It's 11 years now since Lost premiered, and it's been over 5 years since it ended. But what are your thoughts? You know, kind of looking back now. This is kind of we kind of brought back the Lost podcast to kind of have conversations with some of our podcasting friends and stuff like that. And we've been going back to other episodes, kind of looking back on them with this kind of lens of, you know, what is its impact now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, versus when it was on the air? Like, what does that mean to you for Lost?
Well, just in terms of the, like, actual impact that the show had on television, like, I feel like that nobody has ever, you know, come along and been able to be sort of like the, you know, the next Lost. And the fact that they were able to do it like on, you know, on network TV,
yeah,
where you know, I just don't see that ever happening again where, you know, a network drama is able to be sort of like, you know, not just like so, serialized and also have like sort of like a, you know, this sci-fi fantasy element to it. And I feel like that for so long there were so many shows that were just trying to be the next Lost. And like the more a show like aimed to be the next Lost, I felt like the more people were going to like sort of say this isn't Lost, and just like you know, just how well it was, you know, produced and the music and the score, it really you know, nothing else was able to ever, you know, come along and duplicate it. And I think that, you know, there's still like so many people like trying to search for that next franchise, which is going to be Lost-like, but I just don't know if it'll ever happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, when you think about it, like J.J. Abrams directed the pilot. He's directing Star Wars now. Michael Giacchino did the score. And Michael Giacchino now does like the best scores you'll hear in any movie on, you know, in the cinema beside, you know, sub, you know, John Williams. But yeah, like it was just an amazing thing. And I think the point you brought up, that it was on network TV, is kind of the crazy part. Because like most of the shows that like kind of maybe are at that caliber, like that amazing TV show caliber, like a Breaking Bad, a Walking Dead, Game of Thrones, it's not network TV. It's on, you know, a cable channel or pay for cable channel.
And it's 10 episodes like in a Game of Thrones or even like things like a Breaking Bad, you know, or 13 episode seasons. I mean, you know, and maybe not as much by the end, but I mean, Lost was doing this for, you know, what, you know, 22, 24 episodes, you know, a season for a couple of years. And that's just incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's where, you know, people that do criticize the show, and I think it's fair to criticize some parts of it where you could tell they were dragging things on in some points, or the last season, a lot of people criticized the last season, the Flash sideways and how it ended. But I think what they don't take into account is this was a network TV show. This was on ABC. And the fact that they were able to put that out there is insane. And you could also argue that maybe it set the tempo or set the bar for these other shows to kind of do these amazing serialized shows that are out there, like a Breaking Bad.
Yeah, it was a game changer in terms of like what was able to be done and what people like were expecting in sort of like the dramas that were not on like pay cable. Like, you know, there were things like Sopranos, of course, and other shows like, you know, The Wire had started before that point. But just like to expect these kind of shows that were, you know, so high concept also, it really was just changed the whole landscape of television.
So what are your thoughts with kind of one of the I won't say controversial, but after the show ended, the creator of the show, Damon Lindelof, who created it with J.J. Abrams, he almost had like these Twitter feuds with people about like the end of the show. And it was almost like this big thing for a while. And it became so severe after the end of Breaking Bad that Damon kind of just quit, you know, Twitter and quit kind of doing interviews and stuff like that, and just kind of pulled back from kind of talking to the public. What was kind of, I don't know if you paid attention to that at all, but what was your thoughts with the end of the show and kind of what was the aftermath of that end?
Yeah. I did not love the ending, you know, at the first viewing. I was rather upset with it, and I felt like a year later I had actually gone back and watched it again and a lot of the final season, and I would ended up in like a much better, much like the characters in The Flash sideways. I ended up in a much more peaceful place with all of it. And I think that it really came down to just managing expectations, because I think that a lot of the hype around Lost was it's this big mystery and so many of these mysteries are going to be solved. And it really, I think, you know, for the most part, I felt like the show struggled whenever it attempted to answer mysteries. It's like that those mysteries were always like so much more interesting in our head in terms of like what was going on when we could get like you know, the Jack crackpot theory, and it was so much more fun to talk about, where it's like, oh, they can't have babies because there's radiation. Oh, okay, well, it's like I heard this recently talked about with comic books, where comic books, you know, are unlike any other medium, because it's sort of like you have this one picture in one panel, and then in the next panel is another picture. And what makes it sort of so lifelike is because in your mind, you have to sort of like fill in the blank between what happened here to what happened here. And the way that we were all just like, and you know, specifically you guys, like talking about like, oh, what do you think this means? What do you think that there's this book on the shelf? What is that? And then when any time it was sort of like, oh, that's because of this. And it's like, oh, because there's a light on in the middle of the island. It's like, oh, well, you know, it never could, you know, be as interesting or as mysterious or as wonderful, you know, in practice as it was in our mind. So I think that, you know, coming out of it, like, I feel like they probably could have done a better job of saying like, hey, not everything is going to be explained. Like, this isn't a show about the mysteries. Like, it's a show, it's a story about these characters. And if you're watching it to have, like, you know, the magic trick revealed at the end of the show, you're going to be disappointed. And I think that for the people that really expected, like, oh, I'm going to tune in the last show and it's going to be like, you know, the end of Ta-da. The movie Clue, where, you know, Tim Curry is going to take you through the island. And it's like, okay, and then the Man in Black, this was actually this. And then, and myself included, I came in like, can't wait. Okay, now we're going to find out what everything meant. And, you know, that's really wasn't what it was all about.
I think, yeah, I think I don't know if you've watched The Leftovers at all, and the second season.
I've seen a little bit of the first season, and I know that's something that, you know, that they've said about that show, like, hey, we're never going to explain,
yeah,
what the, you know, how the people disappear.
Yeah, and I think he almost learned from the mistakes of the past, where he's like, don't, if you're in it to find out why they disappeared, don't watch the show. But
you're not going to find out.
But the second season, the first season, it can be tough to get through parts because it's really depressing, but the second season has been fantastic. Excellent. It's been absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And just to speak to the controversy in terms of that, you know, people can be horrible on Twitter. Really, it's really what it comes down to, where, you know, you really, you know, try to, you know, okay, well, let me go ahead on Twitter and let me answer questions from people. And, you know, none of us have ever dealt with sort of like, you know, the number of people trying to contact us on Twitter the way that those guys were. And, you know, they're doing the best they can. They're trying to answer every question, but they're trying not to also, you know, give anything away. And they were podcasting and doing like all sorts of stuff, trying to be good to the fans. But then, you know, it's just like an avalanche of when the angry mob comes for you on Twitter, there's nothing you can do. There's no answer that you can satisfy people with in 140 characters, and you're probably at some point like best to just not engage.
Yeah, and I think it's what it came down to.
But it's too bad because he was. I actually enjoyed following him on Twitter. He was funny. He hit, you know, he'd recommend shows to watch, and I mean, I watched The Wire because he recommended it. I had never watched it.
Nobody else ever recommended it to you? Because I feel like that's the show everybody recommends. Like, oh, you haven't seen The Wire? Oh, you gotta see The Wire, man.
It was always some other shows. Oh, really? I think people did, but I always pushed Deadwood and Friday Night Lights. But he was on, I think, The Nerdist, and I saw him on Twitter saying, but I said, all right, I'll give this a shot. And he was right, so.
Well, there you go.
It's a shame.
And another thing we like to talk about with the guests who come on the show is their top five favorite moments of Lost.
I know it's not on there. The ending.
It's interesting to hear people's thoughts because everybody kind of has a different five, and the things that they remember are special for different reasons. So it's always kind of cool to hear their favorite five. So what's your five favorite moments from Lost?
So I was actually fortunate because in the final days before the Lost finale, when we were all sort of like really going, you know, crazy trying to figure out what was going to happen, I had actually written a blog on my website, which was the 15 greatest moments from Lost.
Oh, nice. So, you already had it ready to go. Five years early.
It's ready to go.
You're just waiting to be invited on the podcast.
There were a lot of YouTube links which have since been taken down, but nice. At least like going into the finale, I don't think there was anything from the finale that ultimately was going to crack that list anyway. even though I did find the finale, like I really did sort of like, really like that idea that sort of like where in this Flash Sideways, you sort of like are ending up with all these people that you hung out with, you know, along the way. You know, I did, like that idea and come around to, find that to be a very comforting thing if that's what ultimately happens to us.
But my question would be, would you be ticked if it was all the people you were actually on the island with on Survivor? It's like, wait, I don't want to hang out with you guys.
Yes. Yes. that would be a little annoying.
I'm in hell. Okay, I got it. All right.
Yeah.
I went the other way. Okay, I got it.
Yeah. Rob doesn't look that thrilled to be here. Like, no. come on, Jeff. Who's laughing now, funny guy? Like, no, come on. Stop.
And he just, that would be anybody's hell is just having Jeff give commentary to like everything you're doing forever.
Yeah, everything you're doing. Like,
I guess if you're in hell, you don't get your torch snuffed, it just gets lit, right?
Yeah. You get snuffed.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right, five.
So these are, I felt like, the five best things that I saw on that show. And even though my number five is kind of dark, I really thought that this was a very important moment. Because I think that, Lost just did things on TV that nobody else had ever done. Like, they broke a lot of rules and really changed up expectations. And I think that, you've seen so many shows since that time, like, try to sort of replicate that. And one of the big things for me comes from in season four when Kimi ended up killing Ben's daughter.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The fact that happened was just like such a, shut the front door moment that I couldn't believe that they did that, to a character. They killed a kid on a show in front of like, Ben's eyes, and you just did not think that the show was, able to do something like that.
No,
and
yeah.
It was just such a downer. And Ben is like, not a good guy. And you were like, no, how could they do that to him? And so it was really just a moment that is very emotional, and you couldn't believe that they did it. And it was like happened like in the middle of an episode, right?
Yeah.
Where it was just like,
I still remember his face, like the rage on his face. Plus, that's Daniel Rousseau's long lost daughter. She never really got to reconnect with her daughter too. Like, that's a nope. huge moment,
right? And he's like bluffing that, like, yeah. I don't care, go ahead, do it. And they called his bluff, and like, no, oh man, that was great.
Yeah, no, good call.
Yeah,
all right, number four.
Number four, I'm gonna go with the moment that Desmond calls Penny. In Constant, yeah. And like that was really just another like sort of like emotional moment where it's like I think that's like the first time where somebody is able to like connect with somebody, and he's chasing, like, Penny, and he's able to call her, and he gets her on the phone, and again, and the music is always so great in all these moments, and it's really like. For me, it's like these like emotional moments is like really when the show just knocked it out of the park, and it's not like any of these sort of like mystery solving moments or things that are explained. It's always just like the moments of like these like major emotional moments, and it was such a great scene where they finally were able to connect on the phone, on the boat, after like all the different things that they had been through. So when Desmond calls Penny is my number four.
Good choice. That's on a lot of people's list is the Constant, like that scene. And it's one that people still talk about. It's just like that. It's a very emotional scene. So good call. Number three.
Yeah.
Popular episode.
All right. The scene in the submarine from The Candidate with the time bomb. That is just, again, that's so the fact that they did that, and you're waiting that whole final season of like, all right, who's dying, and then just the way that ultimately played out, where there's sort of like they're like saying that they're convinced that they know the rules, and then they're trying to figure out what to do with the bomb, and then they like just pull the wires out, and then like it stops for like 5 seconds, and they're like, oh, okay, well that was easy, and then it just, the clock just starts going so fast all the way down.
Yep.
And then Saeed runs off with the bomb. And, just super emotional, and you know, it's just like one of those scenes where you're just like watching with your mouth open. Like I remember when it was on and just sitting there like, oh, what? Oh my God. And then the whole thing with Jin and Sun back together. And I was not Jin and Sun fans. Like they got on my nerves a lot. And I took no pleasure in seeing Jin and Sun ultimately go out, but again, super emotional.
Oh yeah,
I have a question. I've asked this because I took a lot of heat when that episode aired. I said Jin should have left Sun because he had a daughter.
Yeah,
she couldn't get out, and I got a lot of hate mail for that. I said, but he had a daughter. The daughter was raised by a tyrant. I mean, we're assuming you know her father. I said, so I've asked everybody. I asked Jay, and Jay's never really given me an answer back. Before he said, oh, I definitely, before he had a kid, oh, I'd definitely, I'd stay there. Would you, okay, you have a kid now, would you leave your wife? You love your wife, but you have a child. What do you do in that situation?
See, I feel like it would be more the call of the person who's pinned there. It's like you want me to die? I mean, I could stay, or should I go take care of the kid? What do you want?
No, really, go ahead. Go. Just leave me here.
My final moments on Earth would be a fight with my wife. Like, well, what do you want? I'm asking you. What do you want me? Do you want me to stay? I'll stay here and die if you want me to, or I'll go stay with the kid, with the baby.
My wife would say, you even have to ask? Well, yeah, because I don't know what you want me to do.
So it's not so much you've made the decision, it's just you drown arguing still. Like,
yeah.
In the afterlife, I told you to go.
Right.
All right. Number two.
Why is Jeff Probst here?
Rob made a horrible choice.
Yeah, Rob really going to regret that one. He's going to be hearing about that one for eternity. All right. Then number two I have, and this is from going all the way back. It was sort of like bookends. We went to like sort of the very end, and then sort of like all the way back in the beginning, where in the walkabout, where you find out that Locke was in the wheelchair.
Oh, yes.
And that, to me, was just such a game changer moment for the show, where it's sort of like, you know, there's sort of like some wacky stuff going on in the premiere, but you're sort of like watching that. They sort of like got you into Lost, where there was like these like billboards and stuff. It's like, I think that the idea of people like living on the island, it was sort of like appealed to me in terms of like, oh, this is like serialized Survivor. Oh, this is like what Survivor would be like if it happened in real life. Mm-hmm. And they didn't really promote too much of like the mystery element, that there was something sort of like magical about the island. They sort of like promoted it kind of like an action movie where, you know, they spent so much money on the first episode. And then it was sort of like, okay, so they got you in with that. And it's like, okay, well, I want to see what happens next. But it wasn't really until that moment, I feel like, that you sort of like, hold on a second. Wow, there's something special about this show, where it was like, it was good. But I think that this was like the first like, wow, this show might be fantastic, at that point where, you know, you had that reveal. And I think that that was just such a like important moment of sort of like just giving us a sense of like what this show is going to be all about.
Nah, that's a good, because it was very much promoted like that. Oh, it's scripted Survivor. It's like Castaway, but a TV show, which I think was the original pitch that the original creator had before it was given to J.J. Abrams and made into this crazy thing. But no, I agree. That's it. Definitely a lot of people's moments where they're like, oh, I like the show, it's good. But then it's like, oh my God, I gotta see what happens next, is that walkabout scene. It's a very good pick. All right, go ahead.
Yes. I was going to say, that's a really good point. Like, I don't know if you've ever read the Alan Sepinwall book about how the revolution was televised. And he really goes into a lot of the backstory on, you know, how they sort of just came up with the show, and people at ABC had that just this concept, and it wasn't really until they just didn't even know what it was going to be about, and it wasn't until like, you know, J.J. Abrams really started to come up with like some of these ideas about the mysteries and stuff like that. So kudos to those guys.
Yes, absolutely. All right, and now it is time for your number one favorite scene or moment from Lost.
for me, and again, this was probably the ultimate game changer, where it was like sort of like the thing with Locke was like, wow, this is the kind of show that this is going to be. To me, the thing that really, you know, changed things up, and, you know, I did feel like the show was beginning to get stagnant in the third season, and as much as I loved the show, I was like, really, where is this going? And you know, around that same point that everybody was sort of getting kind of frustrated with things, with the bear cages and all that stuff, and you know, I really started to get excited towards the end of the third season, and then when it's the flash forward and you find out that, you know, Jack tells Kate, we have to go back to the island, and then they pulled the whole switcheroo on us, and then you had to go back and watch the episode again. It was like really like that Sixth Sense moment where it was like, wait, hold on a second. This whole thing would play out in the future, because, you know, you had like all these sort of like flashbacks that like didn't really have any yet, you know, where Jack's tattoos and stuff like that, where these backstories like didn't really mean anything, and then it's like, wait, hold on, this one is in the future, and that really, you know, sort of just sort of like set up the end game of the show so much. And I think that that was my favorite moment of the show, just because it took a show that you thought you already like had figured out and just sort of like put it on its head and changed everything up. So that is my number one moment from Lost.
Nice, good pick. That was definitely, I still remember, I know Jack felt the same. I was like, where do we go from here? Like, what can we still podcast about? Like, what's going on?
What have they done to our show?
But it was just so much uncertainty, because you didn't know. Like, it took the norms of everything you expected from it, just kind of like broke them down and said, it's going to be completely different now. You know, we're going to go past the island and see what happens. So yeah, it was definitely just a crazy finale. Absolutely crazy.
Yeah, I really love the season that followed after that, where you know, it was like the season of with the flash forwards, because the flashbacks, I really felt like, you know, I was very bored during like the season three flash, especially like where like the first time around the horn with all the flashbacks, it's like, oh, okay, I can't wait to get this person's backstory. Yeah. What was going on in their world? And then by the time we were going back to, you know, people like, you know, four or five times now, it's like, okay, Jin and Son episode. But, you know, it was such a, you know,
we don't care what Kate did.
Yeah, we don't care what Kate did. Yeah, I mean, I think the one that kind of ticked a lot of people off in season three was the Jack's tattoos episode, where it's like, oh, we're going to find out what Jack's tattoos mean with Bai Ling. And it's like, oh, that's really boring. Like, that doesn't really matter. Like, but yeah, no, it's a really, really good point. Fantastic top five list. I'm glad that you took about 6 years prepared and have it ready to go for this show.
It's had it ready to go.
All right. Well, you know, I know that we're getting close to the World Series start here. So we'll let you get going here. But before you do go, do you want to kind of give to the people listening at home? And again, I assume probably most people listening to this know you and know Rob has a podcast and all the amazing stuff you do. But do you want to kind of say where people can find you and all that fun stuff?
Sure. You can hear all of my reality TV podcasts at robhasawebsite.com, and all of our stuff that we're doing on scripted TV, a lot of stuff about Walking Dead right now, and a bunch of other scripted shows at postshowrecaps.com. And you can find me on Twitter, if you can spell it, at Rob Cesternino.
This is a spoiler alert warning for Walking Dead spoilers through the rest of the episodes. So if you don't want to hear anything about The Walking Dead in this season, end the show now.
Okay, real quick, Glenn alive or dead?
Glenn is so alive, and it's so annoying. I really dislike that they did that. I ranted on Sunday night about this, where it was like, oh my God, Glenn is dead. And my co-host was like, my co-host Josh Wigler, who was like, I think that Glenn is still alive. Like, there's no way Glenn could be alive. I'm like, I know where you're coming from, but I'm pretty sure he's still alive.
I've been arguing, why did they go inside the dumpster?
Oh, that would be good.
The walkers can't climb, right? So maybe why are you standing on top?
I'd rather get eaten by a zombie than sit in this, you know, poop-filled trash can.
Yeah, it's terrible. It makes no sense that they do it. It's just sort of like that, you know. It's basically, I think it's terrible on the part of the show that they would do this, and I hope I'm not spoiling Walking Dead for anybody.
I'll put a hashtag spoiler in front of this, don't worry.
Okay, good, okay. Good. It's basically like, because if Glenn is alive, it's basically like, you know, you have kids and they go to school and you come home and you just tell them like, hey, kids, the dog died today. And the kids are like, no, why did you do this? And it's like one thing if the dog actually died and you have to tell the kids.
You have to,
And then it's like, psych, you should have seen your faces.
Like, I got it on YouTube.
Why did you do this to us? I don't know why they. And then it's not even going to be a regular episode this week. It's going to be a flashback episode. And so, to me, this is just like, you know, daytime soap to do something. Where it's one thing to do it like in the commercial break, like it's like, oh my god, like Charlie's dead. He's like he got hanged, and then it's like, okay, oh he's not dead. Okay, you can do that for a beat in an episode or in the commercial break, but to do it like at end an episode, make us think a character is dead, and then have another week where we're not going to know, and then come back and then they're not dead. I just don't like that a show would do that to its viewers.
Plus, he's surrounded by a billion walkers.
There's
no possible way. And plus, his head was exposed. But
yeah,
I don't know, we'll see.
To me, it's like the same kind of thing about like Heroes, where it's like where people started to get out on Heroes, where it's like, oh my god, this character is dead, and then the next week they would bring them back to life, and it's just like you get that sort of like social media bump where you kill off a character, and then it turns out like, oh no, we tricked you, he's not dead. Yeah,
yeah, so, I agree with you.
Very upsetting.
I was sad. I mean, like going, no, not Glenn, no.
Right. And just like with this list where I'm talking about where, oh, they killed off Ben's daughter. And it's like, okay, you know, that's, you know, real, you know, okay, you know, they didn't cheat it. And again, you know, with John Locke, you know, they killed John Locke, but then he was back, but it wasn't really him, like the actual guy. Like, that's still fine. But, you know, this is like, you know, this character should be dead. They tried to cheat it to make us think he's dead, and he's just going to be like, oh no, it was actually the other guy.
Yeah. Just kidding.
The walkers got bored and left after that. They just.
All right. Well, thank you again, Rob. As always, it's fantastic getting to talk to you, catch up with you, and we'll look forward to all of your podcasting endeavors. I think the one show I listen to the most in this house is your shows, mainly because Colleen always has them playing. But it's really good. It's really entertaining. You're fantastic at it. So for those maybe that haven't listened to them at home, check out all of Rob's shows. It's fantastic, fantastic stuff.
Well, thank you guys so much. It's always a treat to listen and to talk to you guys. So thanks so much for having me on.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Well, thanks for being here.
Anytime. All right. Well, Rob, thank you so much. Good luck to your Mets. They're going to kick butt today. They have possibly the best starting rotation in the history of baseball, maybe.
Sounds like a jinx.
I'm not jinxing.
The history of baseball.
That's what they're saying. Like that's what the people are saying on the Facebooks.
Well, if it's on Facebook, it's got to be
on the
true,
Twitters. So. That's what they're saying. But
they're saying it twice on Twitter.
Good young rotation.
They're fantastic. It's fantastic. So kudos to them. Hopefully they'll kick butt, and we'll be rooting for them here. Rob, thank you so much, and congrats, or a pre-congrats for when you get that World Series and that new beautiful baby in your life. The best of the best of both worlds. And then if the Mets lose, at least you're getting a kid too. So there's
at least
if the Mets lose, go to the zoo.
All right, guys. Well, thanks so much, guys.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
All right.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.